be no great shakes. Inflation has gone, came almost to 4.5% and then started rising once again. And just listening to Eyewitness News a couple of minutes ago, hearing that fuel prices are going to go over 25 Rand. Certainly the inflation genie is not yet back in the bottle. But for last month, at least inflation quietened down just a little bit, from 5.6% in February to 5.3% in March. It's not huge, and prices are still rising at an unacceptable rate. They're just rising more slowly. Our interest rate has been elevated now for the last 2 years and will likely remain that way for most of this year at least. But I saw a really interesting post today on LinkedIn from Dan Steenkamp. Dan is an economist and chief executive at Codera Analytics. And I felt like you were having a go at some of your colleagues in financial markets and in the industry of economics, if you like, in the trade of economics, about forecasting and how we've got the forecasting around inflation and interest rates so terribly, terribly wrong for a long time, Dan. What's the bee that has got in your bonnet?
Great to be with you. So, absolutely. So the post today was about the use of core inflation as a predictor of headline CPI in future.
Okay, now, first things first, Chetan. Explain core inflation versus CPI, because CPI is the number with which we're familiar. It's the simple one. It's the rate at which the Reserve Bank measures inflation. And then when that number doesn't suit us anymore, we start looking at something called core inflation, because that allows us to ignore a whole bunch of other stuff that we don't like, that is making inflation higher than we would like. So let's focus on core inflation instead. What is the difference between core and CPI?
So core inflation is one measure of what economists refer to as underlying inflation. And there are different ways to measure underlying inflation, and core inflation is one of those. So core inflation in South Africa, Statistics South Africa, excludes several volatile components from the inflation basket, so things like fuel prices, in order to get a measure that is less volatile. So the statistical agency produces two of these underlying measures. So one is the core measure that you've described, and then the other one is the trimmed mean, which excludes some other categories from the calculation. Now, the intention there is to get a measure that enables you to understand what is happening to trend inflation, and importantly, economists tend to use these measures of underlying inflation to forecast what might happen to headline in future. And this really matters because the central bank uses these kinds of measures in its models to think about what the appropriate setting for interest rates must be. And so a key consideration is whether these kinds of core measures of inflation are useful for understanding what might happen to both inflation and interest rates in the future.
Okay, so what's wrong with this approach? Because you seem to be very critical of that approach. Certainly, I don't think it's worked very well. Why has it not worked very well?
So what we show is that these measures of core inflation don't do a good job of predicting where headline inflation will go. And so they've also been particularly bad since the COVID-19 pandemic, missing the inflation spike that we've observed since around 2021. And so what this means is not only don't they help us understand where inflation might go, but they also don't have a very strong economic intuition. So they don't help us understand what the underlying driving force is that is behind movements in inflation. And so what we've been arguing is that alternative measures should be monitored, and particularly ones that have a cleaner economic interpretation. And so those are measures that give you a sense of the distribution of price pressures across different types of products, or which components of inflation are more sensitive to monetary policy or to the business cycle.
And so, I mean, I'm hoping I'm understanding you correctly here, Don? I mean, the key factors that have driven inflation over the last couple of years have been the disruptions caused firstly by COVID and the lockdowns and the disruptions to supply chains. Then we had Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and that then caused all sorts of complications in terms of energy costs and in terms of food prices. And then, of course, we had the Gaza invasion, and that has continued for the last 6 months, and that's led to all kinds of other disruptions. And then the Red Sea became unplayable for a while in terms of getting goods through the Red Sea because of the Houthi rebels firing missiles. And those are not things that are picked up by core inflation, right? These are outlying factors, and these are not factors that are fixed by raising interest rates. And I think that is the core point.
Exactly right. So when COVID hit, the Reserve Bank here, as central banks around the world, characterized the nature of the COVID pandemic as predominantly a demand shock. And so they were caught completely by surprise when inflation started rising after the pandemic, as they started to realize that the pandemic had serious supply implications, as you've described. And so what that means is both the underlying measures of inflation that central banks have been focusing on, both here and internationally, and the kinds of models that are used to try and understand what is driving inflation and what the appropriate stance of monetary policy should be, so what should be done with interest rates, these frameworks have really struggled in the post-COVID period because of this spike in inflation and the persistence in inflation over the last several months.
And inflation remains persistent and unpredictable. And we've had interest rates at multi-year highs now for at least up to 3 years in some economies. We have seen, however, economies which raised interest rates and did restrict the availability of money in economies, they've got their inflation under control far more effectively than countries that pretended it didn't exist. And I cast my eye particularly towards Turkey on this one, because the President Erdogan was giving instructions to his brother-in-law, the governor of the central bank, to say, cut interest rates, make money more freely available. We've got to get our economy moving. And that led to hyperinflation. So even though we're critical of our own Reserve Bank, we're critical of the US Fed and the way they've responded to this inflation cycle, because it's not been driven by consumption, it's been driven by these other factors. Was there a better way of managing it, I wonder?
So my take on it is very much about the way that the central banks interpreted what would happen to economies after the COVID pandemic. And I think the combination of slower growth in South Africa in combination with higher inflation has done is really raise questions about whether central banks have the right tools with which to understand developments in the economy and interpret what the underlying driving forces are. And so our argument has been that we need to be much more careful in characterizing demand and supply shocks. And when the COVID pandemic hit, it was very clear that it would have very meaningful supply implications for the economy. But frameworks that capture those kinds of effects haven't often been used for making monetary policy decisions. And so it's both that we need more measures of inflation that help us understand these kinds of factors, and also models that help us understand what monetary policy should do in response.
But this is not an overnight project. This is not something you can simply implement and go, well, here's the new mechanism. This is a deep academic process, I would guess. And we're still stuck in the sort of framework, I suppose, or when you're the only tool that you have in your toolbox is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail and you smash it as hard and as vigorously and as often as you can. And that's been the tool that central bankers have used, to some effect, but it's also had the negative effect of really hurting consumers with debt. It's really hurt people's ability to spend. And I would argue it's probably constrained in some respects the spending capacity and therefore growth paths of some economies.
To add to what you've just said, I think the difficulty in South Africa is that a lot of our inflation is driven by things that the Reserve Bank and monetary policy cannot affect. So we've seen government-related inflation grow much faster than other components of consumer prices. So think of things like the price of electricity or water or other administered price categories. And that makes it very difficult for monetary policy to bring overall inflation down when there are components of inflation that are growing much faster and don't react directly to higher interest rates. So as you say, what that means is that there are parts of the economy that that are very sensitive to interest rates, that are under a lot more pressure, and have to be put under more pressure in order to bring the aggregate down.
So should our Reserve Bank be saying the effect, inflation is being driven by effects beyond our control? We have got an economy that is not growing. The economy is constrained. Should we be cutting interest rates despite the fact that inflation is away from the comfort zone, that target of 4.5%, which Lisa Chakanyahu and the Reserve Bank actually wants reduced to closer to 2-3%?
The tricky thing here is that inflation is our inflation rate and our inflation target is already much higher than many of our emerging market peers. So what that means is that South Africa is losing competitiveness over time. And so it's not just a question of what the Reserve Bank should do now, but also over the longer term, how do we get South Africa to a lower average inflation rate without having to bear really large disinflation costs? The danger of loosening monetary policy before inflation has begun to move closer to the inflation target is that inflation could become unanchored, and getting inflation down once it's become unanchored
Absolutely. Is
much more costly. So we don't want to get into a turkey situation. So it is really important in this cycle for the central bank to make sure that it doesn't loosen too soon, that it is confident that it will get inflation back to the target. And then there's a separate question about what should that target be, and how should we manage the transition to a different target.
Yeah. No, this is complicated, high-grade stuff, but thank you for explaining it to us, Don. Good to have you on The Money Show this evening. Economist and CEO at Codera Analytics. A very critical piece on LinkedIn. You'll find it there today. And he just says, you know, we are looking at the wrong sorts of effects when we're trying to understand inflation, and perhaps we need new kinds of measures. Yay, more data! To try and understand the intricacies of inflation better. And will we therefore make better decisions when it comes to how we then respond to inflation spikes like the one we've been enduring now for the last 3-4 years.